The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Dozens of demonstrations are beginning, across Russia to protest against corruption.
Russia arrested hundreds of people yesterday at dozens of demonstrations. Now, this was the largest wave of anti-government rallies in years.
Now, the Russian authorities say that this anti-corruption protest is illegal. The riot police intend to clear the whole square now of protesters. Meanwhile, we hear that the opposition activist and anti-corruption campaigner Alexei Navalny has been detained by police just up the road.
He's a candidate for next year's presidential election, running against President Vladimir Putin.
Well, I mean, he wants to run in the election against Vladimir Putin, but there's very few people who believe that he would have any sort of chance. Vladimir Putin has about an 80% approval rating here in this country, so it's very difficult to run against him.
You know, part of the conversation there, too, is these eight Russians who were holding key positions in the country who have died in the last 5 months. The latest, that murder on Thursday in Kiev.
President Putin is up for re-election next year. Widespread discontent like this probably won't keep him out of power, but it is likely to happen a little worried.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer, contributing editor for the Trumpet magazine, standing in for your regular host, Stephen Flurry. You just heard a rather stirring summary of the protests across Russia this weekend. I do love the Russian national anthem. We've all been walking around humming that, but thanks to our producer, Sam Livingston, for putting that together. It's been a pretty brutal week all across Russia. There have been over 1,000 people arrested in those protests, which you heard about in that montage, in Moscow alone, and there have been protests in at least 80 other cities. We'll talk more about those protests in just a minute. But first, we're going to look at some of the other events that have happened in Russia, or connected to Russia, over the last week or so, because it has been, as I said, a very brutal week of Vladimir Putin cracking down forcefully on dissidents, killing, maiming, injuring his opponents. So last Tuesday, exactly a week ago, Nikolai Gorokhov fell out of a four-story window and was seriously injured. It was the day before a court appearance. And here's a quick news clip from, I think it was CNBC, on that event.
The lawyer of a Russian whistleblower's family was seriously injured after falling from a fourth-floor window on Tuesday. A news release from the lawyer's spokesman says Nikolai Gorokhov suffered severe head injuries and was in the ICU of a Moscow hospital. The incident happened one day before Gorokhov had a court date in a high-profile corruption case. Russia media outlets say Gorokhov fell while helping movers carry a hot tub up to his apartment, but others say the circumstances were suspicious. Gorokhov was investigating the death of Sergei Magnitsky, a lawyer who died in prison in 2009 after claiming that organized criminals worked with Russian officials in a $230 million tax fraud scheme. Magnitsky was working for an American hedge fund when he revealed his findings, and its founder, Bill Browder, launched a campaign after his death to seek justice. Activists believe Magnitsky's death was a result of police abuse while he was in custody. The bottom line, the lawyer of a Russian whistleblower's family was seriously injured under alarming circumstances.
Seriously injured the day before giving evidence. He's also was due to give evidence in the United States. And now he's in serious condition with serious head injuries. And carrying a hot tub doesn't often involve falling out of a window. So naturally, a lot of people are very suspicious about that death. And here's more on that story, this time from CNN.
He was going to show up in Moscow court with a bunch of new evidence, which consisted of emails and WhatsApp messages showing that Russian organized criminals were communicating directly with the Russian police to try to cover up the murder of Sergei Magnitsky and cover up the corruption crime that Sergei had exposed.
And now he may never be appearing in a Russian courthouse. We don't know. So that was on Tuesday. Then on Thursday, Denitsy Voronenkov, a former Russian law minister who fled Russia last year, fled to Ukraine and then began criticizing Vladimir Putin. He was gunned down in broad daylight in Ukraine. And here is more on that story from that same CNN report.
Gunned down in broad daylight, Denis Voronenkov, a critic of Vladimir Putin, killed today in Ukraine's capital, Kiev. His horrified wife has to identify his body on the street. Voronenkov was a former Russian lawmaker who fled to Ukraine last year. Ukraine's president says his murder is, quote, an act of Russian state terrorism. A Ukrainian prosecutor calls this an execution of a witness.
When he gets to Ukraine, he begins to give evidence about the Russian connection to former Ukrainian President Yanukovych and possibly the Russian invasion of Crimea and annexation.
So obviously being gunned down in broad daylight is a very blatant act. And this comes a few weeks after another anti-Putin activist, this time Vladimir Kara-Murza, was poisoned and nearly died. And here's another clip from that CNN report on his near death and what this all means.
And yet another Putin critic who's had some bad luck in recent weeks. Vladimir Kara-Murza was in a coma last month, then came out of it. The second time in 2 years he'd fallen into a coma after a suspected poisoning. Kara-Murza is an activist who's called for more open elections in Russia.
I think what's not coincidental is that all of these folks are swimming in very dangerous shark-infested waters. The message is out. If you are going to oppose very powerful interests in and around Russia, you're going to get hurt or you may get killed.
You're going to oppose Putin, you may get hurt, you may get killed. If you're criticizing Putin, if you're criticizing the Russian government, you're in very dangerous waters. And here we're just talking about deaths, well, deaths and attacks in the last week or just within the last month or two. So, and this is something that over the years has become incredibly common. For example, one recent headline from the Washington Post, it was, here are 10 critics of Vladimir Putin who died violently or in suspicious ways. You know, it's kind of like there's so many of them that the newspapers are starting to compile. Well, here's a top 10 list of people killed by Putin. Now, at the same time as this murder in Ukraine, there was an uptick in violence. Here's a few quotes from the Daily Signal yesterday. And they write, with the world's eyes on London the day after a lethal terror attack outside of Parliament, a series of violent incidents swept across Ukraine on Thursday, highlighting what lawmakers in Kiev said was a covert effort by Moscow to destabilize the country. The broad daylight assassination of an exiled Russian lawmaker in central Kiev on Thursday morning came just hours after a massive explosion at a military ammunition depot in the town of Balakilia in northeastern Ukraine, which forced 20,000 people to evacuate, according to the State Emergency Services of Ukraine. In a meeting with security officials in Kiev on Thursday, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko addressed the parallel timings of the incidents. I believe this is not a coincidence that the murder took place on the same day with the sabotage in Balaklaya, Poroshenko said. It's an old Russian strategy to plan and conduct its attacks when the world is looking elsewhere, Marcel van der Herpen, director of the Cicero Foundation, a Dutch think tank, told the Daily Signal. The terrorist attacks in London and the continuing quagmire in the White House offer the Kremlin an excellent occasion for its destabilizing actions. And it does. I think we would have seen a whole load more attention on those attacks, on the broad daylight murder of a exiled Russian lawmaker. But we were all focused on the London attacks that day. Thursday was the day after those attacks. It's just like when they invaded Georgia during the opening of the Olympic Games in Beijing. You know, they do this where a lot of people are focused elsewhere. So that's some of the background. And then on Sunday, you had these protests sweep Russia. And there have been protests in Russia before, but there's a lot to show that these protests are more serious, more significant for Vladimir Putin than a lot of the protests in the past. Roland Oliphant, he wrote for The Telegraph that 5 years ago, talking about some of these past protests, authorities were able, with some justification, to characterize the demonstrators who filled the capital's boulevards and squares as members of a coddled metropolitan elite, divorced from the lives and opinions of the vast majority of Russians living beyond the Moscow Ring Road. After Sunday, however, that idea is dead. Demonstrations in 82 cities by the opposition's count, including in no particular order the regional capitals of Nizhny Novgorod, Novosibirsk, Yekaterinburg, and Vladivostok drew crowds in the thousands and were organized by locals, not hipsters from Moscow. So it wasn't just protests in Moscow, it was protests across the country, all the way over to Vladivostok, right there in the Far East. Then he also talks about the demographics of the protesters and about how many of them were 20-somethings and teenagers. And they say, he writes, it's just possible that many of these youngsters were there as an act of teenage rebellion. But the political debut of Putin's generation, those with no or little memory of Russia before 2000, signifies a profound political challenge for the Kremlin. Unlike their parents, they do not share the visceral memories of unpaid wages, currency collapse, and rampant organized crime during the wild 1990s that the Kremlin spin doctors have exploited brilliantly to underpin Mr. Putin's long-term legitimacy. So this could be part of a new wave that Russia's government is now having to deal with and pacify, a new generation, one that doesn't remember what it was like before Putin came to power, and that doesn't kind of fear that same anarchy the way that their parents did. The Atlantic makes some similar points writing about these protests. They write, this is significant because the regions, as everything outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg is known, are significantly more conservative and Putin-friendly than the two biggest cities. They're much poorer, much less developed, and people living there are often more dependent on the state to make their living. There is almost no independent media there, except for what can be found online, and information critical of the government can be hard to come by. Going against the government, against the authorities, can result in serious repercussions, both economically and in terms of personal safety, sometimes more so than in Moscow, where people have more money, political connections, and the savviness to solve their problems. The fact that thousands and thousands in areas outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg came out, despite this tremendous risk, to participate in rallies that were, with few exceptions, not permitted by the authorities, means a few things, and none of them are good for Putin. So it looks like these protests could be a significant development. Now, Putin will be, he's up for election next year. Authorities want it to go smoothly. They want him to be elected with 70-80%. And these protests are challenging that. They mean that these elections could not go as smoothly as they want. And that meant they were met with a relatively tough response from the government. As I said, they declared the protests illegal and they arrested 1,000 people in Moscow alone. Now, the government is also cracking down on Oleksiy Navalny, who organized the protests. They've been pushing him through the courts on trumped-up charges over the last 4 years. He's probably the most prominent anti-Putin leader within Russia that's left alive. Others, like I think it was Boris Nemtsov, was shot in the back. Garry Kasparov has left the country. So he's probably the most high-profile opposition leader, and he was behind organizing these protests. And he's being accused of some complicated charges of embezzlement. The charges are kind of so convoluted that people have taken to saying that he's accused of stealing a forest. It's some kind of ripping off a lumber company, but stealing a forest. And he's been found guilty of this twice. And actually, the second time he was found guilty, the judge read exactly the same decision as the first time, including exactly the same typos as the first verdict. After the protests, he was given another trial for organizing these protests. He wasn't allowed to call any defense witnesses, and he was sentenced to jail. And because he's on probation for stealing the forest, it could result in years of prison. And this stealing the forest is not the only charge he's faced, by the way. He's also charged, for example, with defrauding the French cosmetic company Yves Rocher. And this company, even during this court case, it said that it hadn't been defrauded and had no claims against him. But despite the fact the company saying nobody's stolen anything from us, he was given probation for that while his brother was locked up in a prison camp. And so he's been pursued with all of those trumped up and often faintly ridiculous charges. So this has been going on in Russia over the last week and longer. Government killing or locking up people that it doesn't like, arresting thousands of protests. And I bring up the uniqueness of the protest over the weekend, not because I think Vladimir Putin is going down, not because I think they're going to overthrow Vladimir Putin, but instead because if this continues, it could well produce an even harsher crackdown. You know, Mr. Putin has shown himself to be the kind of leader that will do whatever it takes to keep control of Russia. And so will we see even higher rate of killing of opposition leaders? Will we see more arrests, more authoritarianism, more crackdown on protests? It seems very likely. I meant to bring the exact title, but I forgot to grab that there. But Jeremiah Jacques, my colleague at The Trumpet, he wrote an article a few years ago talking about how a lot of Russian leaders have this kind of transition to become just super authoritarian as they try and retain their grip on power, and on how something like this could even force that kind of a change on Vladimir Putin. And that seems certainly very plausible. Now, you know, these attacks, they do show that he's already quite the authoritarian. He's not at all afraid of killing, locking up, jailing his enemies, his opponents. And here's what Charles Krauthammer had to say over the last week. And it's a couple of minutes long, but he makes a great point. So we'll play the full clip.
And let's start with Russia for this foreign policy round. Charles, more than 1,000 people in Moscow alone apparently were arrested in these protests yesterday. Anti-corruption, anti-Putin. They don't take kindly to protests in Russia.
No, this is a malign regime. And the statement by the White House was a fairly mild one. But think about what just happened in the last couple of days. Last Thursday, a Kremlin opponent who took refuge in the Ukraine, he's against the Ukraine operation, was shot dead in the street in broad daylight. 2 days earlier, a week ago on Tuesday, another critic of the regime who represents the Magnitsky family, another guy who died on orders of the Kremlin, he falls out of a four-story window when, according to the regime, while installing a hot tub in a fourth-floor apartment. Now, I don't know about Russia, but in the United States, installing hot tubs is not a known cause of defenestration. So there's a little bit suspicious. And we have a president who talks about this guy, who is a killer. We're talking about Putin here. He kills his opponents. There are at least a dozen who are well known, and speaks about it flippantly. This is a guy, look, it doesn't mean you start a world war with this guy. It doesn't mean that you have to oppose everything he does. But this is a regime of which the Trump administration has spoken very mildly. And I think it's an affront to our values. It's also against our interest. There are Europeans like the leading candidate for president in France who was just in Moscow. She smoked a peace pipe with Putin. She spoke glowingly of him. This is Russia extending its influence in a way that will be very much detrimental to us and to the West.
Some great points from Charles Krauthammer there. They're very similar to some of the points Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry made in a recent Key of David. This particular one, it was given in January. It was called Vladimir Putin, it was called The Prophesied Prince of Russia, Part 2. It was part of a two-part series. And here's how Mr. Flurry summarized what Mr. Putin has done to his own people.
Vladimir Putin has killed in far excess of 160,000 of his own people in Chechnya. Now, that would be somewhat like Washington, D.C. deciding they're going to kill 160,000 people in New York, for example, the state of New York. And Putin's conduct inside Russia, well, you also have to look at the more than 130 journalists that he has murdered since he has been president. And he has just taken total control over the media. He's just crushed any independent media. That would be like America murdering all the opposing journalists of the administration and then just crushing anybody who in the media who opposes them. Now, this is something that is very serious, and we all need to think about it.
It's a very heavy toll and a lot of people dead. And in that program, Mr. Flurry goes on to ask, you know, just a very good and very direct question. How can America get along with this guy? You know, if America can get along well with him, well, what does it say about America as a nation? And here's how Mr. Flurry answered that question.
Can Mr. Trump really get along very well with him? And if we can get along very well with Vladimir Putin, then shame on us. What nation
could be friends with this evil, destructive murderer. And just really a friend of the devil. I mean, he really has all kinds of anti-God policies.
That's a strong statement, but we've seen how true it is, even just within the last week or so. And here's just a final clip from that program.
What happens when we get closer and closer to Putin? We get further and further away from God. That's what these verses are saying. That's deadly dangerous. Where is God? We get further and further away from God and closer to Vladimir Putin so he can prey upon us. And that's what he will do. That's all he knows to do. And he'll do it.
Again, a strong warning to us about Vladimir Putin. And Mr. Flory based that warning off Bible prophecy. Ezekiel 38 talks about a prince of Rosh. And in those Key of Davids, those two Key of Davids that I mentioned, and then also in an article titled, Should Donald Trump Trust Vladimir Putin? Mr. Flory goes through those prophecies in Ezekiel 38. He shows how this is referring to Vladimir Putin. He goes through the modern identity of the nations talked about in those verses. And he writes, this individual controls an enormous, monstrous swath of land in Asia from east to west. This is in that article, Should Donald Trump Trust Vladimir Putin? The territory described in your Bible sounds very much like that of the former Soviet Union, the territory Russia dominates or wants to dominate right now. Later he writes, under Putin, Russia is mobilized and aggressive. He is a powerful prince. Later on in that same piece, he writes, Putin rules an immense territory, but he wants to extend it even further. If you think the world is too sophisticated or too nice for Russia to reconquer former Soviet states and try to create a new Russian empire, it has already happened. The prophecy in Ezekiel 38 is being fulfilled now. And that's what we're seeing with some of those events over the last week, with these protests, with Vladimir Putin growing in strength as an autocrat, moving into Ukraine, destabilizing Ukraine. We're seeing those that fulfilled right now. And the Bible goes on to talk more about the Prince of Rosh and the destruction he'll bring. But note what else Mr. Flory says in that article. He talks about how he's using this unrighteous power for his own purposes. Or God is allowing him to use this unrighteous power for his own purposes. And why? Because God says he's going to cause the heathen to come to know him. God is orchestrating his plan on this planet, and not even the mighty, massive kings of the East can do anything but play right into his hands. All of this great turmoil and war around the world will lead to the heathen coming to know God. It's not pleasant to see a powerful dictator crack down on his own people like we've seen over the last week, arrest them, send them to jail. But we can know this, that he is still a part of God's plan. And that's the hope as we watch this and we watch the rise of the Prince of Rosh, as we see him perhaps crack down more forcefully, building up Russia's power further. You know, it is still part of God's plan and part of God's plan to help the heathen come to know him. And we have much more on that subject over at thetrumpet.com and more in terms of specifics on God's plan there for the Prince of Rosh, for Russia, for the whole world, for what's going on here. You can watch those two Key of Davids, the Prophesied Prince of Rosh Part 1 and 2, or the Prophesied Prince of Russia Part 1 and 2. We have a booklet with the same title, The Prophesied Prince of Russia. You can go to thetrumpet.com and download or order that booklet for free on the website just through the literature tab at the top right-hand corner. And that other article I quoted from, Should Donald Trump Trust Vladimir Putin? You can read that in the March print edition of The Trumpet magazine, a subscription we'd be happy to send you for free. That is actually about it from me. Up next, we're going to listen to the latest Key of David UK program. This was the program that was meant to air over the weekend in the UK. Unfortunately, the censors that control what goes on British television deemed it too strong. It is a powerful program. It's titled Germany's Dramatic Transformation Prophesied. The censors, when they wrote to us, they said that the program implied that Germany was the seventh and final evil empire and we're going to take the world to the brink of oblivion in World War III. So it sounds like Ofcom, that censorship body, they got the message at least. And that is pretty much exactly what the program did say, probably much more than implied, does say that. But they didn't allow it to air. So up next, you can listen to the program the British government does not want you to hear. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to hear that program.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power bloc of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. Following World War II, when Germany was literally in rubble, Herbert W. Armstrong boldly stated that Germany would rise again to lead a union of 10 nations in the territory of the old Roman Empire. Anyone familiar with his work instantly remembers his many articles, booklets, radio programs, and television shows about this union of 10 kings. On today's program, we're going to examine the dramatic transformation now taking place in Germany. How will this impact the rest of Europe? And where does it all fit within the framework of Bible prophecy?
The Trumpet Daily.
I just want to start by referring you to our latest Trumpet magazine, the issue here about how Donald Trump's trade policy could upset the global order. We have a feature article in this issue about how that trade wars have begun. And the Bible prophesied that this is how World War III would start. Yes, indeed, Bible prophecy. That's the great news source that world leaders and scientists have left completely out of the picture. And it's what sets apart the Trumpet magazine from all other news sources. If you aren't a subscriber yet, we offer this free of charge. There's no cost. There's no follow-up. If you give us your address, we'll send it to your box. Every month, 10 issues per year. We have hundreds of thousands of subscribers. This monthly magazine reports tomorrow's news today. It reports world news before it happens. Now, we also have a website that goes along with this. You can look at our website. Our new website, we just recently relaunched it, new and improved, thetrumpet.com. You can go to that site and see that there's no annoying pop-out ads. There's no ads, period. Just a beautiful website with information you won't find anywhere else. I mean, we're seeing headlines today that were in the Trumpet magazine or at the Trumpet website years ago, sometimes decades ago. Of course, if you've followed this program for very long, you know that some of these headlines Herbert Armstrong talked about, like I said there at the top, he talked about this 50 and 60, 70 years ago. And now we see them being fulfilled. I just want to take you, speaking of headlines that you read about first at the Trumpet, let me just take you to one from back in 1999. So this is 8 years ago. It says here, once Europe no longer needs America's forces, it will no longer need or want America. Until that happens, however, a German-led Europe will continue using NATO to camouflage its imperialistic ambitions. And so that's what's happened for the past couple of decades. And you saw it in the 1990s with the breakup of Yugoslavia. Germany's the nation that wanted that. The rest of the world didn't. But Germany wanted it, and then NATO goes along. And of course, the United States did all of the heavy lifting. The United States provided all of the firepower. But it was Germany using NATO, as it says there, to camouflage its imperialistic ambitions. Notice further, it says, for now, this is from 1999, for now Europe will continue to use American firepower, but only as long as it needs it. When that is no longer the case, NATO's forces will be superseded by the European Union's. Notice this, leaving a weakened Britain, Canada, and America on the outside looking in. It won't be long before Europe completely severs its ties with these English-speaking nations. Now, that's what we wrote back in 1999, almost 20 years ago. And now look at the headlines today. Look at what you see all over the news with respect to a European military force, with respect to Europe going it alone, apart from the United States. And, of course, here in Britain, with Brexit, Britain's on the way out as well. Let me just give you an example of this. This is from Spiegel magazine, February 2017. The title, you can see there, Europe Must Plan to Defend Itself. I mean, look, this is earth-shaking. These kinds of developments, you couldn't imagine this happening 30, 40, 50 years ago, but it's happening today, and it's prophesied. We talked about it, as I said, in 1999. It says Europe has long relied on America for its defense, but that era is rapidly, this is one of Germany's leading news magazines, that era is rapidly coming to an end. It's time for a stronger European defense alliance that is less dependent on the U.S. and more capable of asserting its own interests. Like I say, this is one of the leading news magazines in Germany. That article goes on to talk about how that NATO is not yet obsolete and that Europe still has some use for it, but that use is dwindling and that it's kind of a hollow organism. That's the way it talks about NATO today. One of Germany's leading news magazines. It says further, the era in European history when the continent could delegate its security to a partner across the Atlantic has passed. So we're entering into a new era. That's what they're saying. America remains a possible partner for Europe, but it's no longer a reliable one. In the medium term, Europe must be capable of sufficiently defending itself and providing for its own security. So, Spiegel says that America's withdrawal, and that's sort of the talk that the Trump administration has been going on with, that look, you members of NATO in Europe, you've got to provide for your own defense. You've got to start paying up. The days of that American umbrella of security, those days are over. And so Europe, Germany in particular, sees this as an opportunity. That's what Spiegel even says later in the article. This is our opportunity. This is Germany's opportunity. And in that same article, it even talks about Europe developing a nuclear deterrence. Imagine that back in 1945 or 1946. Imagine Winston Churchill or Franklin Roosevelt talking about, well, you know, Germany needs to step up and provide Europe with a nuclear deterrence. You can't imagine that happening coming out of World War II. But now, 70, 75 years on, the world's gone to sleep, and we see history beginning to repeat itself, and no one's even sounding the alarm. If you go back to the original establishment or formation of NATO, it was Lord Ismay who famously defined its role as keeping the Russians out, keeping the Americans in, and keeping the Germans down. Now, he wasn't against the German people, but he was aware of history. He was aware of what had happened several times in the century leading up to World War II. And so that was the purpose, in so many ways, for NATO coming out of World War II. And look at how dramatically that's changed. We've often referred to this signed document put out there by the Americans and the British following the end of World War II, saying that it's our purpose to destroy German militarism and to make sure it never rises again. All German armaments, we're going to destroy them and prevent history from repeating itself. It says in that document that it's going to break up the German general staff that has repeatedly contrived the resurgence of German militarism. That's been the record of history. And so we've got to stop it. That's what the Americans and the British said coming out of World War II. Now let me take you over to Revelation 17, because as I say, we want to make sure that we see where this all fits within the framework of Bible prophecy. This is Revelation 17. Get your Bible, read along with me. And I know some of these verses we've gone through before, but with so much happening every week, it seems like. And speaking of the trumpet and thetrumpet.com, we also produce a daily radio broadcast, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the Trumpet Radio. You can get to the live stream if you just go to our website, thetrumpet.com, and you can hear what we have to say about the real significance of world events and where they all fit into Bible prophecy. That's at thetrumpet.com. Look for the live stream. Here in the UK, it plays at 1 p.m. every weekday afternoon. You can get the live stream or you can get the podcast that's posted later at the website. And listen in and watch and pray always, just like Jesus admonished us to do. Watch world events. Why did he say that? Why did he say watch world events? Most people don't do that, but why should we? Well, because so much is prophesied to happen right before the return of Jesus Christ. And we're living in the last days right now. Even the Bible talks about it being the last hour over in 1 John 2. No more delay. Revelation 10. I mean, events are just accelerating, these prophetic events, all of them. So look here in Revelation 17. We'll start in verse 8. It says here, "The beast that you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wander, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they beheld the beast that was and is not and yet is." Now, as we've noted before, Herbert W. Armstrong, he lived through the sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And he prophesied about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And that's what we're seeing form right now before our eyes. Herbert Armstrong's no longer on the scene. He died in 1986. But all of these things that he prophesied, all of these things that he talked about, like this prophecy in Revelation 17, we see it happening today. Verse 10 says, "And there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is," that was the one during Mr. Armstrong's ministry, "and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space." So another one would come on the scene after Mr. Armstrong's work. And so that brings us to today. The Bible says, your Bible says, that this seventh and final resurrection would continue for a short space. This short space in that 3.5 year tribulation period. Great tribulation, as Jesus said in Matthew 24. And here comes this seventh and final resurrection. It has iron-like strength, as it says in Daniel 2. We'll get to that here in the next segment. But it's an unstable mixture. a mixture of iron and clay. And so it continues just for a short time. It says here in verse 12, "And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast." Now that's referring to the United States of Europe. There's still some dramatic changes that are going to take place in Europe. It's not going to be a massive union of some 27 members. It's going to be pared down. It's going to be pared down to the 10, the 10 groups, the 10 kings, the 10 horns. These nations coming together, and notice the unity, at least for this short time. Verse 13 says, "These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast." One mind. It's headed up by Germany, as Mr. Armstrong said, for so many years. They all rally around that one king in Germany. And it fulfills Bible prophecy. Notice what it says over at Project Syndicate. This was an article that was posted recently. It says, "The key to enabling the EU to meet this potential to save itself and the world from catastrophe is for member states urgently to adopt a European Union first mantra." I mean, that's obviously in response to the so-called America first strategy promoted by the Trump administration. And so what's Europe's response? It's the same as so many other nations. Well, if you're going to put yourself first, we're going to put ourselves first. That's human nature. That's human nature, and that's what Project Syndicate's calling for, a European Union first mantra. If the U.S. cannot be counted on to support global stability, the EU's model and experience will become even more important. That's the way Europe sees the United States. Now, the United States doesn't necessarily understand this, but Europe sees the United States as someone that can't be counted on to support global stability. They see the current administration of the United States as being unstable. And so look at all the calls for a stronger unity. Look at all of the calls for a unified military force. These are all significant developments, and they're fulfilling Bible prophecy. I just want to again comment on how fast these events are moving. Look, you can even look at fairly recent history. When Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933, he inherited this run-down, dilapidated military force. And yet just 5 years later, he had a Nazi military machine. That's how fast it happened in the 1930s. How much faster could it happen today? In some cases, the weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, they're already there. They're already on the continent. They're already in the United States. They're already in Britain. They're already in Russia and China. What happens when you start to see these prophecies being fulfilled? Think about how fast all of this could happen. As I say, you really do need the Trumpet magazine. You need to be a frequent visitor to thetrumpet.com, our website. I mean, that's even more current than the magazine is, because you can get there just with the push of a button, another publication. I'm not sure we've even advertised this before. Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. Some of the information in this publication here, we put it together many years ago, but just in reviewing a couple of these chapters the other day, I mean, you see how right up to date it is. Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. Make sure that you call our operators today and get your free copy of this wonderful brochure, and also become a regular subscriber to thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
Most people have ignored the fact that Herbert W. Armstrong warned the world that Germany would rise again. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe. He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany. The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. The seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire is happening today. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject.
At the top of the last segment, I mentioned how the Trumpet magazine, we've been writing about so many of the events that we're seeing happen today. Another example of that is an article we wrote over 2 years ago, or almost 3 years ago. It was about Germany's identity crisis. Notice, again, what we wrote at thetrumpet.com. This is September 2014. We wrote, the Germans are being forced to realize that meekness and passivity are ill-advised and dangerous in a world that is increasingly unstable, violent, and falling into anarchy. Many of Germany's leaders already recognize this reality and want to respond. For now, however, their ability to forge Germany into an assertive, aggressive, and dominant world power is being limited by the reticence and caution of the German public. That's what we said in 2014. It continues. But this is changing. Moreover, as the crises intensify and begin to impact the Germans more personally, their attitudes will change more rapidly and dramatically. And so we went on to talk about the new Germany that would emerge from all these crises, a Germany that would be more active, more aggressive than the one we're accustomed to seeing, a Germany that would be more militaristic as well. It continues here. This is from now December 2015 Trumpet. Perhaps the greatest effect of the refugee crisis, together with Russia's dramatic resurgence and Europe's rolling financial problems, is the way it is causing Europe to shed this post-war veneer and return to its past. Europe is returning to its past. Germany is returning to its history. What it normally does historically. And as you can learn just in studying World War II, I mean, it's a dark history. Now, it's not like God is against any one nation. Human nature is the problem here. But we've seen these cycles play out before. They keep repeating themselves. It continues. But there's another important angle to this crisis that hasn't received nearly enough consideration. This is the impact of the refugee crisis. So this was in 2015, right at the peak of the refugee crisis. The impact that it's having or will increasingly have on Europe. Not just the cost or the potential infiltration of Islamist terrorists or the inevitable erosion of European culture. These consequences are significant, but something more fundamental and more alarming is unfolding. Europe is experiencing a transformative identity crisis. That was at the end of 2015. And we were saying, look, Germany's about to come out of this identity crisis and rediscover its identity, its historical identity. Now go back and just consider some of the headlines following this Trumpet piece. In early 2016, March, this is just 2 years ago, or rather last year, this is just a few months after that particular piece, March 2016, you had these two state elections where the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland Party, came in third. And then in Saxony-Anhalt, it came in second, pulling in like 20% of the vote. And prior to this time, I mean, the AfD party was seen as sort of a fringe party that would maybe get 3-4% of the vote. But then all of a sudden, it starts pulling in 15 to 20%. And just last September, this is a few months ago, the AfD comes in second in a state election that happened to be right in Angela Merkel's home territory, her own district, pulled in 20% of the vote. Even in Berlin, even in sophisticated, multicultural Berlin, the AfD pulled in 15% almost. Notice what George Friedman had to say. This is at Geopolitical Futures, September 2016. It says, in Berlin, at least, the German political system has shattered. If the Berlin results are replicated on a national level, Germany is going to become ungovernable. This result, taken at face value, indicates that the European foundation, Germany, is moving toward a major political crisis that will resonate. That's what we're moving toward. You can see the signs. The handwriting is on the wall. Now let me refer you to a New York Times piece. This is from earlier this year, February 2017. Germany's taboos, once a bulwark against the far right, may now be enabling it. It talks about how the far right is rising across Europe and that in Germany, this is most puzzling, the Times says. For decades, Germany was thought to be inoculated against the far right politics by its history with Nazism and the Holocaust. But today, Germany is experiencing a resurgence of the right, driven at least in part by its effort to overcome past misdeeds by suppressing any vestige of nationalism. That's from the New York Times. I mean, since the end of World War II, the article points out how that the Germans have typically downplayed their national identity. But this is all changing and fast. It's changing fast. The AfD party is the nation's fastest growing party. Notice the New York Times, it says that focus on identity has allowed the AfD, even if it is unlikely to win enough votes to govern, to shape the national conversation to its advantage and to present itself as the champion of ordinary Germans. See, they may not come in first, but when you start coming in second and third, you can begin to shape the national conversation. And that's what's happening. Let me take you over to Daniel chapter 2. Just a few more verses here. We're about out of time. It talks about this fourth kingdom, the Roman kingdom, four great world ruling empires. Verse 40 speaks of that fourth one. And then down in verse 43, let me just read this in the Revised Standard Version. Well, back to verse 42, it talks about the toes of the feet, that they're part iron and part clay. And then verse 43 in the Revised Standard says, as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. Now you put it together with what we covered in the first segment from Revelation 17. Remember, they come together for 1 hour with the beast, these 10. They have one mind. There's all of that iron-like strength for that short term. But it doesn't last for years and years and years. It's just within that short tribulation period because of this unstable mixture. And it leads right into, as it says here in verse 44, and in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. So that's what all of these prophecies are building toward. It's leading right up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. Remember, as I said in this in the first segment, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. This is the first time we've made this available on television here in the UK. Make sure that you call our operators or go to our website or text us with your address information so that we can send you a free copy of this brochure along with a free subscription to our monthly magazine, The Philadelphia Trumpet. That's all that we have time for today. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.